Lights, camera, action.
And the winner is...
Welcome back to the Oscar Real Movie Podcast, where we discuss and review past, present, and potential future Oscar-related movies. I am your host, Matthew Schmidt. I have been watching Oscar-related movies since I could walk and am joined by my co-host and lovely wife, Haley, who is a recent movie award season fan and brings a fresh set of eyes to these movies. Today, we start our reviews of the most recent Best Picture nominees. We're going to try to get them all out before the Academy Awards happen on March 27th. But not only that, but we are starting out with some heavy hitters when it comes to the award season. We have the favorite to win Best Picture and Director at the Oscars in The Power of the Dog, and the favorite for Best Actor in King Richard, that being Will Smith. Now, quick note, the King Richard review is a recording from a while ago that we hadn't released yet, so we don't mention what Oscars it was nominated for, so I will splice that in right before the review. And yeah, let's just cut to the chase. On with the reviews. All right, the featured film review of the episode. So we're doing this year's, or past year's, however you want to do it, the Best Picture nominees. We're going to be reviewing those. So the first one up that we've got is The Prohibited Favorite, The Power of the Dog, streaming on Netflix, for those who don't know. Some info on it up front, directed by Jane Campion, who her more famous film is from the 90s. It's from 1993, called The Piano. She won an Oscar for writing that movie, but was nominated for directing as well. It was nominated for Best Picture, but she must not have produced it because it's not on her nominations list.
Mm, okay.
But, so yeah.
She's the first woman to be nominated twice for Best Director.
You're stealing my thunder. That's one of my trivia notes. So good for you. Good job. Yes.
You turned that around. That was like slap on the wrist, now a pat on the back.
Yeah, I'd say that's good info, but don't steal my thunder from me too much anymore. But yeah, you're right though. Like, that's amazing. She's the first female. Well, amazing in multiple ways. One, good for her. Like, amazing for her. Two, insane that this hasn't happened already.
Right.
And I know
90 plus years of Academy Awards.
Yeah, this is the 94th, I think, coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that it's been widely known that there haven't been a lot of females nominated for Best Director, but still crazy that no one's done it twice until this year.
Yeah.
And this would be, obviously, then the first time ever two females win in a row.
Yes.
If she wins. She's a favorite, I would say, at this point.
Cool.
So, yeah. Directed by Jane Campion. 93 was when she was nominated for The Piano. Lost to Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List. Guess what? They're nominated the same year again. Spielberg nominated for West Side Story, which we'll talk about sometime down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Acting, so the stars of this, there's basically four main ones. All of them got acting nominations for this. Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Cody Smith McPhee. So Cumberbatch and Plemons play brothers. One of them marries Kirsten Dunst. Cody Smith McPhee is her son. So that's kind of, I mean, those are the four. There's very small bit roles in this outside of those four, but they are the four of the movie. Budget, Wikipedia says $35 to $39 million, which is amazing. This is kind of in that indie, maybe not indie.
Say, that's less than I would have expected.
Like, this is kind of in that range that a lot of movies were made in, where it's not quite indie, but not like studio. But like, it's still a studio film, but not box office expectation film. So kind of a smaller budget these days for a film, but. Good on ya. Box office, these numbers are a little weird because it's a Netflix release, but in order for it to be considered for award season, it has to be in theaters. Kind of like The Irishman is when I really learned about this a little bit.
Yeah.
So it does have box office numbers. It's a little over $200,000. But again, that's what it's currently at $200,000, which is very low. But again, it's a Netflix film,
sure.
So the point of this movie is not necessarily to be a box office success, but mm-hmm. it has box office numbers because again, needs that to be considered for the Oscars and other awards. And speaking of those awards, let's run through what it has won or has been nominated for so far. The three that I usually look at, the Golden Globes, they already happened. It won three. All these would be in drama since they split it between drama and comedy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It won Picture, Best Picture. It won Best Supporting Actor for Cody Smith McPhee, which actually it isn't split between comedy and drama. He just won Best Supporting Actor. The other acting roles are, but supporting is not.
Supporting isn't.
It won.
Interesting.
And then it won director for Jane Campion. It was nominated for actor, Benedict Cumberbatch, supporting actress, Kirsten Dunst, screenplay, and score. The SAGs have not occurred yet, but it has three nominations. Best actor for Benedict, supporting actor for Cody Smith McPhee, and then supporting actress for Kirsten Dunst. And the Academy Award. You're going to say something?
No, I will say it after you get through the Oscar nominations.
And then the Oscar nominations came out recently. It has 12. It's the most out of any film for this upcoming Academy Awards, which is a reason I would put it as the front runner to win at least Best Picture and Director. But it's a lot of the similar ones we've been saying. Picture, Director, not only the three main acting nominees that it's been getting with mm-hmm. Cumberbatch, Dunst, and McPhee, but also Jesse Plemons got a nomination out of it. Directing, screenplay, already said picture, production design, which if you've seen this, like, makes sense. Like, I get why this movie got so many nominations, because it's like a period piece. It's set on a night, like a good back. Drop, mm-hmm. you know, and all that. Like, it's technically made really well.
Yeah, the outdoor scenery is beautiful, but also, like, the houses and stuff that they're in were really well done.
Yep.
Like, the sets. Yep.
So, sound, cinematography, film editing, and score. Again, like, I get all of them. It's a well-acted movie.
Mm-hmm.
It looks gorgeous and beautiful. Ratings. Did you want me to go through those real quick, or were you going to say something?
Yeah, no. What I was going to say when you were running through the nominations, so like the SAGs had Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, Cody Smith McPhee nominated. Those are the three that I would lean more towards. Honestly, when I saw that Jesse Plemons was nominated, I was like, okay. But I haven't paid that much attention to what the other supporting actors, list looks like. So maybe it makes sense, like, with some additional context. But if I just looked at the movie itself, I was a little surprised
mm-hmm.
about Jesse Plemons. But
no, that's fair. I think a lot of people would say that, at least out of the four, like, he's giving, like, the least amount of chutzpah, as they say.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't go through too much growth. Like, he's the same guy throughout it. The other
right.
three definitely go through, like, an arc
mm-hmm.
or a roller coaster of emotions, at least.
Yeah.
So. Ratings as they currently stand on Rotten Tomatoes, it's certified 93 with the critics, 83% with the audience. Metacritic, it's an 89 out of 100, which is very high.
Yeah.
It's usually tough to get a high score out of that. IMDb is the one that is very different than the rest of these. It's currently a 6.9, which is very low. I think I told you if it were to win Best Picture and the score would remain the same on IMDb, it would be the lowest Best Picture winning score since 1963 when Tom Jones won, which I think is a 6.7 or something like that. So this would be the lowest score. And IMDb is all fan reviews. You know what I mean? It's like, take it for what you will. But a lot of people look at it. So there
yep.
you go.
Yep.
All right. Some quick trivia on this movie before getting into our thoughts on it. It's based on a book, the same title. I think it came out in the 60s, 67. This movie was entirely shot in New Zealand, which is where Jane Campion's from. It was shot in actually 2020, but then like COVID delayed it. It was shot a while ago. Cumberbatch and Dunst were so in character, they didn't talk to each other while on set. Kirsten Dunst practiced the piano for her scene. Like, she practiced piano, but, like, if you've seen the movie, like, there's a particular scene where she's, like, getting ready to play the piano, and she actually practiced to play this piece, and then if you've seen the movie, you understand, that scene got cut. Like, in the movie, she doesn't actually play the piano. And that, but she did originally, and it got cut, and she was kind of upset about that, apparently. Cumberbatch didn't wash for 2 weeks, started chain smoking, and got nicotine poisoning 3 times. So that might be why Kirsten Dunst didn't want to be around him.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. He was probably insufferable on set.
Yeah, so.
I feel like more that I've read about him, he, like, really gets into that sort of thing. Like, becoming the part. Here's what I was going to say about the Kirsten Dunst thing. I don't... Because I read that thing, too. I think the intent of the story was there were 2 different songs that she practiced for the movie. Okay. One of them was cut, but it wasn't like, you know, when she sits down in front of the governor or whatever, it's not like, oh, like, we're cutting the song. Like, I think it was always intended that she was never going to play in front of the governor.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I saw the...
Yeah. She worked very hard to learn the piano piece she plays on screen. She had originally mastered 2 musical pieces, but 1 was cut from the final release.
Oh, okay.
I just think that, yeah, there are just 2 different songs that she learned, but it only centered around the 1.
Okay. Paul Dano was originally cast as George, which is Jesse Plemons' role, but dropped out due to scheduling.
Okay.
I assume it's because of the Batman.
Well, I will say, like, one thing that threw me off a little bit in the movie, I was like, oh, Benedict Cumberbatch and Jesse Plemons are supposed to play brothers? They look nothing alike. Doesn't mean they can't be brothers, but I'm like, I kind of like it when they have, like, a similar appearance. I could definitely see some sort of resemblance between Benedict Cumberbatch and Paul Dano.
Skinny, mostly because they're
taller. Yep, thinner, so.
Plemons is a little more on the plump side, so yeah. You mentioned this, Campion's first female to be nominated for director twice. Plemons and Dunst are the 4th off-screen married couple to be nominated for acting in the same movie.
Oh, in the same movie?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be, in the same year. Okay. Wait, did you say married? I don't think they're married.
It said married in the trivia, IMDb trivia. Wouldn't let me down, right?
And Wikipedia does not say that they're married.
Okay. Well, maybe it's just off-screen couple at the time. And I know one of them was Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton for...
Yeah, right?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Cumberbatch, Dunst, and McPhee are all in Marvel movies, but different universes.
Okay.
Even though, like, spoiler alert for Spider-Man No Way Home... The Raimi
ties them
Spider-Man
anyway.
Kind of tied 2 of them together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Nice.
So now let's move to a quick non-spoiler general thoughts of the movie. And we'll do our scores in here too. I can go first. I mean, some of it's pretty obvious. Like, it looks beautiful. I should have looked this up. I assume it was all, like, real. Like, the landscape. I don't know if any of it was CG or blue screen.
It all looked... I'm sure some of it was... Like, the stuff in the house probably wasn't necessarily, like, on location. But from what I gathered in that little, like, 15-20-minute piece about, like, Jane Campion, like, directing this movie that we also saw on Netflix, it seemed like all of it, like, all of the scenery... was legit on location, so it was cool.
Yeah, like it looks gorgeous. The acting is phenomenal, especially like
Cumberbatch is so good.
He's amazing. I think Cody McPhee, I think he's a front runner to win. Supporting actor, he's really good in it.
Yeah.
Kirsten Dunst is good in it. Like, she deserves a nomination, I would say. I wouldn't say she's, like, an outright, like, a front runner to win it, but she, you know, goes through her issues in the movie. Cumberbatch is great. If it wasn't for Will Smith, I'm sure he'd be the favorite to win Best Actor. But, yeah, and Plemons is good. Like, we talked about how, like, he's maybe the weaker of the four, but he's still, like, good. He does, he serves his purpose and does it very well. So it's just fantastic acted. It's a slow burn of a movie. Mm-hmm. I definitely get.
It really is.
I get why some people would not like it. Like, your parents told us that they watched this, like, months ago, and they were like, nah, didn't like it.
Yeah.
And when I told them that it was, like, the betting odds favorite to win Best Picture, they were like, oh, God. Okay, sure. So, like, I get why it maybe wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea because it's very much a slow burn. But I felt like it kept, like, me intrigued enough through it. Like, there were things happening or tension going on that, like, it kept you, like, intrigued enough. Like, it's nothing crazy, thriller, like, you know, anything like that. But, like, it's enough to get you through it, and then I think the ending is, like, phenomenal.
Yeah, well, and it consistently moves forward. I think sometimes there are, like, slow movies where it's, like, you kind of go, where is this going? I feel like we're all over the place. This, like, had a very deliberate, like, forward motion to it, where it's just, like, things just, like, slowly keep changing. Like you said, I think the ending was worth the payoff.
Mm-hmm. So
I will say one thing that I think continued to, like, ratchet up, like, the engagement for me was the fact that we had it on with subtitles. And, shoot, now I can't think of it, but what did it keep saying about the music cue?
Uneasy.
Yes, uneasy musical theme. I'm just like, I feel so on edge right now. I feel so uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just kept saying, like, uneasy musical tone. I'm just like, yeah. What's happening? What's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think I had questions throughout it where I'm just like, why is Benedict Cumberbatch, like, why is he doing, like, this, like, X thing?
Mm-hmm.
They kind of would answer all the, like, random things that I was questioning by the end of it.
Yeah.
So, like, I appreciated that. The relationship between all the characters was, like, interesting enough for me, where it's, you know, the two brothers are clearly, they're different, but, like, love each other. So, like, their relationship was interesting. Obviously, Phil, who's Cumberbatch, and Rose, who's Dunst, have, like, the big, like, clashing. Like, they don't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there are multiple scenes between them where it's just, like, where I was very engaged. And then you have her son, who's Cody Smith McPhee, who, you know, it is quote unquote, like, different. Like, I think that's kind of evident from the trailer.
Yeah.
So just, like, where is he going and how is he fitting into everything was, like, intriguing enough for me. But again, like, it is very much a slow burn. Like, there's not a lot quote unquote happening throughout this movie until the realization at the end. So, like, I get it, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes. I would agree.
What score? Do you have anything else to add, like, non-spoilery, I guess, on your thoughts on it? Things you liked, didn't like? Like, I think this isn't a spoiler, but it's revealed that Phil, again, Benedict Cumberbatch, like, went to, what college did he go
Yale.
To? Like, Yale. And he's, like, this really smart guy, and I feel like that wasn't really explored too much. Like, they say it, but then, like, his character, like, he doesn't do anything to, like, give you, to show you the smarts, I guess, that, like, they say he had, you know what I mean? Apparently in the books, he's like, really good with numbers and things like that. Like, some of that stuff wasn't really portrayed on the screen too much, so I could have used more of that, I guess.
Sure.
But, like, anything else that you can think
maybe
of?
Maybe the one example of him being, like, somewhat extraordinary was the fact that he's, like, really good at playing the banjo.
Yeah.
But that was, like, one scene.
Which we'll talk about later. Like, that's a scene I want to talk about later. But, yeah, like, music given. But, like, academically, there wasn't
And
much.
I'll have a comment for possibly how that plays into the end a little bit. But I think that's interesting that you found out in the book that they they dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah, it was numbers, like, specifically. Yeah. And I don't know what that entailed, whether it was, like, business, because they're ranchers, yeah, so I don't know if it's, like business-related or what, something. But it was, I saw something where it said, like, he's really good with numbers, so I could have used a little more of that, I guess. But.
Sure. Okay.
What score would you give it?
This is tough, because I haven't looked at my others for some context, like, make sure this fits in, but I'm thinking, like, an 8.4.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 8.7 for me right now. It isn't quite engaging enough. Like I said, there are intriguing things for me, but it wasn't quite engaging enough for me to get it in like the nines where it's like phenomenal. Like it's a great movie in my opinion. So 8.7 for me, which kind of puts it in the, you know, it's a mid to like top-ish, and like if it were to win Best Picture, like it's a decent score for Best Picture winner for me. Mm-hmm. Do you think if it were to win, is it a worthy Best Picture winner?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's not like I wish there was a better movie out there for me, because Best Picture to me, like the fact that I understand why someone might not like this movie is evident enough of like maybe it isn't the most worthy for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like, when Parasite won, I'd tell as many people as I can to, like, go watch that movie. Like, that is worth it. Like, that is a...
instant class.
Instant, like, picture perfect, no pun intended, like, Best Picture winner. Like, I love it. Like, this to me is... and I like kind of giving recommendations of, like, a movie that this reminds me of in a way. Like, it reminds me of, like, English Patient winning Best Picture.
Okay.
Like, it's a slow burn of a movie. It's got great scenery. Like, I get why it would win. Is it my ideal winner? Not necessarily. I'm not going to have, like, the biggest issue in the world if it wins. Like, I would totally understand it. It isn't, like, a complete dud of a winner. I shouldn't even say complete. Like, it's not a partial dud. Like, it's not, like, a swing and a miss by the Academy or anything like that.
Like I Green Book.
Yeah, that one is like, get that shit out of here. So, like, I get why it would win, but it isn't, like, my ideal winner. For like, the fact alone that where, like, I can't recommend it to everyone. Like, I would tell people, like, if you're willing to, check it out, but it isn't. I wouldn't say it's a casual
moviegoer. Yeah, you feel like you need to, like, preface it with, hey, this might be something that might not interest you.
Yeah.
Whereas, like Parasite, you're like, anyone can find this movie.
Anyone should find it enjoyable, for sure. Like, it's more on the artsy, quote-unquote, artsy-fartsy side of movies for me, which, like, can be a turnoff for some people. So, like, movies it reminds me of is, like, English Patient.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, from the 50s, the movie Giant, which is about Texas ranchers, like, on, like, take away all the oil-related stuff from that movie, and this reminds me a lot of that.
Okay.
And a little bit of No Country for Old Men, basically on the slow burn. Like, I think No Country for Old Men kind of is this. Like, if you take away, this is like a little hypocritical, but like, if you take away all the action scenes, like all the thriller parts of No Country for Old Men, this reminds me a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Take away the violence.
Yeah, because like, that's a slow burn of a movie, and it's a Western. Neo-Western at least. So I have another movie I'm thinking of, but that's maybe on the spoiler side of things. So that's kind of what it reminds me of a little bit.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Those are really good comparisons.
So
I don't spoil things. Name me one thing that I've actually spoiled.
Alright, we'll go into spoilers. We'll walk through the plot of the movie really quick for those who haven't wanted to see it, then we'll discuss it. So it's about two brothers who are ranchers. We kind of talked about that a little bit. George, who's Jesse Plemons, and Phil, who's Benedict Cumberbatch. And Phil is, like, the nastiest, one of the nasty persons alive, right? Like, he's rude.
He's physically disgusting. So he doesn't bathe, he smokes, he drinks. He's just, honestly, seeing him, I was like, this has got to be, like, mid-late 1800s, just how disgusting this person is. And I'm like, then you get more clues and stuff. I'm like, this is 1925. Like, dude, you have electricity and running water. Like, clean yourself
up. Which definitely takes place later than I thought. I thought it was going to be, like, the Western in the 1890s.
Old West. But yeah.
No.
The Wild West.
1920s. Yeah. So, And then his brother, George, is more, it's Plemons, and he's more like, he's the polite.
Put together.
He wears the suits and ties, and, you know, like, he's a more polite, straightforward guy.
Mm-hmm. A little more social, like, he kind of keeps up with, like, his, like, parents' social contacts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they're friends with the governor and whatever.
And
a little more highbrow.
Sure. And they stop at an inn with their employees, like their rancher employees. And the inn is run by Rose, who's Kirsten Dunst, and her son, Peter, or Pete.
Isn't it fun Smith, hearing Kirsten Dunst say Peter again? Peter Parker.
Not in the same way. She runs an inn, cooks some food, and McPhee is, you know, shown to be quote-unquote different because he makes, like, flowers out of paper and puts them on the tables, and, you know, Cumberbatch is, like, rude, says, like, what lady would have made these, sets them on fire and makes fun of the kid. Terrible person. But anyways, George kind of falls in love with her, so over, like, the coming weeks, months, however long it is, he goes and sees her a lot. They end up getting married. She comes out and lives on the family house slash ranch with Phil and George while Pete goes to medical school. He's going to be a doctor. I'll talk about why he's going to be a doctor when we talk about differences between the movie and the book. So Rose and Phil end up having a very tumultuous relationship. Like, they do not like each other.
She's, like, I shouldn't say she's immediately intimidated by him. She's immediately put off by him because he made Peter cry.
Mm-hmm.
When they first met at the inn.
Yep.
So she's, you just start off on a bad foot right away.
And then you're kind of meant to assume he doesn't like her because she's kind of taking his brother away from him to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, they have a lot of back and forth. My favorite scene, I'm going to start picking, like, a favorite scene of each of these movies, is the scene you were talking about earlier with the banjo. So she's trying to practice the piano because George, her husband, is like, the governor's coming over, my parents are coming over, you're great at the piano, because she told that to him. Like, you get play the piano for us. And she was kind of lying, like, she knows how to play, but it's very out of practice. So she's, like, practicing.
And she's like, I played in the pit. At the movie theater. I do show tunes. I don't do classical pieces to impress your politician friends.
Yep. And so she closes all the doors, practices, and then Phil, like, kind of sneaks into the house, goes upstairs, and then while she's playing, he plays the banjo, but he, like, only plays while she's playing. And then, like, he opens the door and is, like, watching her while doing it. So he's, like, playing the banjo, quote-unquote, better than, like, her playing the piano. And it's kind of driving her crazy, like, mentally.
Yeah, especially because she's trying to figure out a part. And she keeps hitting the wrong key and she'll fix it and then, like, mess up again. And pretty soon, like, she just kind of stops and he just goes on, you know, with his banjo, just, like, playing the whole thing perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously from memory.
Yeah.
Because she's got her sheet music in front of him. He just picks it up in his room.
So that's like a scene where, it's not action-packed, but it's like intriguing and tense in a different way that, like, I
enjoy.
And
it totally sets her down this path of just
she starts
destructive
drinking.
Choices.
Yeah, yep. She starts drinking herself to death, basically. So that's their relationship. Not great. And then eventually Pete, like, when school's done or he's out for the summer, whatever it is, he comes and lives with them on the ranch. And Phil starts kind of torturing him a little bit, too, because he's just kind of put off by him because he's, quote unquote, different. And it's mentioned throughout the movie that the two brothers had this mentor named Bronco Henry that Phil was really close to. They were, like, best friends. And Phil has this secret area. He calls it the sacred area. Or at least they said it in the documentary. I think Jane Campion called it the sacred area.
Yeah, that might be right.
But it's like this little swimming pool area.
Little creek.
That he, like, has a bunch of Broncos stuff there to, like, remember him by this. And Pete, like, finds it.
And it's like the only place he bathes.
Yeah, true. And Pete finds it. and then gets yelled at by Phil and tells him to get out. And then, like, right after that, Phil starts treating Pete, like, well or nice. Like, he tells him, like, hey, come over here. I'm going to teach you how to ride. I'm going to make a rope for you. We're going to do this together. And Rose is, like, put off by it because she's just like, I don't like you. I don't like you being by my son. And yeah, she's kind of like.
She probably had the same reaction that I did. Ulterior motives. Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like, what are you getting? You can't possibly be nice to him out of the goodness of your own heart. Like,
yeah.
You're going to turn this around or something.
So, and that drives her to drink more and more and more because Pete wants to be around him. Like, mm-hmm. He's saying he wants to go out with him. And George is kind of like, yeah, like, they kind of like each other now. Like, it's fine, whatever. And then it's revealed in the end, or it's implied, heavily implied. Phil is gay and maybe in love with him, or at least lusts after Pete. And it's implied that, like, him and Bronco Henry had a relationship, like, more than friendship, too.
Yeah.
So he, at the end of the movie, kind of expresses himself in that way, and Pete reciprocates. But then in the movie, at some point, Phil cut his hand a little bit, and then the end of the movie, he's, like, getting really sick. It's kind of implied that the cut is infected. He goes to the doctor, and then it's revealed that he dies. And then you find out, like, the big twist is that Cody Smith, or Pete, like, killed him on purpose.
Indirectly.
Yeah, like, he didn't, like, stab him or shoot him, obviously, mm-hmm. but he, like, infected him with anthrax purposefully mm-hmm. and then killed him off to, like, make his mom happy. And the last scene of the movie is, like, after the funeral, it's George and Rose, like, coming home and kissing in front of the house and showing that they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pete is watching them through the window and, like, walks away and he, like, smiles.
Yeah.
So, like, he killed Phil. And because it's, because there's a scene in the movie where, like, he finds a dead cow and, like, starts skinning it or doing something to it.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, he used the diseased cow hide and asked Phil to use that hide to make his rope.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's how he got him infected with anthrax and killed him.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. It was mind blowing.
I was gonna say, as soon as it was over, you and I we slowly just started backtracking, like, okay, he died because he had poisoning from a cow, right? And then it's like, okay, well, he probably got infected because of the cut. When did the cut happen? When did the cowhide thing? Like, we just kept backtracking, like, at what point does Pete decide he's going to kill him?
Yeah, and that's a question I had here. Like, when did he come up with this plan?
So fun to talk about that. We were just like, we were even rewinding, like, when does this happen? Is this related to
which
this?
Which is, like, what makes this a better movie than I think some people, like, some I say, like IMDb, or maybe, like people like your parents who watched it who didn't love it. Like, that's this is what makes it intriguing to me, is, like, you can talk about it and rewind, and you can watch it a second time and it's different. It's like,
right.
It's like, oh, Pete's, like, studying medical books right now, but is he really, like, reading up on how to kill Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And like, we rewound it. He skinned the cow before Phil gets the cut on his hand.
Yes.
So it's like, did he, like, when did this plan take place? Like, did he skin the cow after Phil volunteered to make him a rope? I don't know if we checked that out.
Oh, you're right. I don't know if we did.
So, like, maybe that's when he went, oh, he's going to offer to make me a rope. Well, I'm going to skin it. And then the cut happened and he went, that's definitely how I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah.
I mean, like there were hints all along the way that you didn't even realize were hints. Like you said, he's a medical student. There's one point where he, like, catches a rabbit out in the field and he brings it back into his room and, like, dissects it. And you see he's got, like, an anatomy book in front of him. Like, he wants to be a surgeon. He's doing this stuff to, like, practice, whatever. Okay. He goes out and finds this cow that had wandered off because it was sick and he cuts it up and you just think he's doing the same thing. This is just a bigger specimen, whatever. All these little breadcrumbs were along the way that you didn't even realize were part of his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think, like, the little nugget that Phil is Yale educated kind of plays in, because he talks down to this kid, and you can tell to other people, just they don't think that Pete's really worth anyone's time. But to me, at the end, it's like this kid who no one wants to spend any time with, no one wants to pay attention to him. He's the one who outsmarted like a Yale graduate. That's something.
Power of the dog.
Exactly. So, you know, and it's just the Yale thing. I think they're trying to kind of like juxtapose it. Like, oh, you probably have a certain like preconceived notion about what it means to like be someone who attended Yale, right? You're probably smart and rich and whatever. And Phil doesn't want to wash up. Like, he literally skipped dinner with his parents and like their politician friends. They're like, you have to wash up. And he's like, no, I don't want to. So I'm not coming to your dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And they mention along the way in the book, like he's like castrating all of the cattle and stuff. And like, oh, you don't wash ant. You don't.
Very graphic. You don't. Very graphic castrating scene, by the way. You just cut the bottom and
he just yank out the testicle. Ripped out the testes.
And they showed it.
But, you know, they're like, oh, you don't wear gloves. And he's like, yep, nope, don't need to wear gloves. And so that's kind of plays into, oh, he ended up getting infected. And
it's like all part of the plan, right? Like, it makes it seem as natural as possible. Like, that he died because he was dumb and didn't protect himself all the time.
Yep.
Crazy. I talked about my favorite scene already. Did you have a favorite scene at all? Like, is there anything in particular? Like I said, I really like the banjo scene because he's kind of driving her crazy in like his own way, but the way it was like shot and done was like really good to me, because like you can kind of hear it in the background and you're like, is he playing the banjo? And then he gets louder and louder and louder, and then you just see him doing it. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really well done.
I think one scene, like in hindsight, that stands out a little bit more to me, just, you know, at the end, is when Phil is working with Pete to, like, train him on the horses, just, like, in a little corral, like, out in the field, like, with all the other ranch hands and stuff. He's just kind of in there, and then he, like, smacks the horse and gets him on the gate. He's like, oh, just go, and Pete ends up, like, falling off the horse. You see that, and it's kind of, like, you can tell Pete's not comfortable on this horse. He's not confident in it, but shortly after that is when he gets the horse, takes it out into the hills.
It's the next scene. And I only remember that because he's wearing a backpack. And I thought, oh, is he using the backpack for balance? Because he'd just fallen off a horse. So, but yeah.
You know, and you can see he's like gritting his teeth as his horse is going through like some loose terrain and stuff. And he's just like, what the hell are you doing, kid? Like, why are you doing this? You're not comfortable on a horse. And this is when he like cuts up the cow. I'm like, okay, I guess those are the lengths he's willing to go to, like, work on his surgeon skills. And at the end, I'm like, oh, those are the lengths he would go to give his mother a better life.
Those are the best misdirections. Yeah, it gives you an initial thought, and it's different. That's how they work. And that's the good ones. Really, that's how the good ones work.
Exactly. So, I like that.
So, all right, last part I had to talk about was the difference between the book and the movie.
Yeah.
So, the big main difference is the father of Pete. So he is in the book. The book actually starts out like years and years in the past.
Okay.
And they all kind of know each other. So John Gordon was his father's name, and he was a surgeon. He was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it, and I think it said it went to school with Phil.
Okay.
And after Pete is born, Phil like makes fun of John a lot for having like a weak looking son, and like he makes fun of him so much because in the movie it said that his father killed himself, hung himself, and Pete found his body.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happened in the book, and he killed himself because Phil like berated him so much, which gives another reason as to why Rose wouldn't like him and why Pete would want to take revenge on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and why Pete wants to be a surgeon because his dad was.
Yeah.
So it just gives a little more backstory to that.
Yeah. You know, I think that's super interesting. But also I think the movie did a good enough job of explaining like why Pete would want to do that, but also I think it gave it more mystery.
Yeah, by not including it. Like,
I think
having his dad die because he's pissed at Phil might have been too much of a red herring, or like, yeah. It depends on how they do it, I guess. Like, if you do it the right way, I guess, like, the only reason I would maybe put some, you could have put some of that in, is just pacing. Like, it's a slow burn of a movie, as we said. This could have, it could have given it more pacing. But, like the movie is really good anyways, so it's hard to critique it. But that's the big difference I was able to find between the book and the movie, so.
Okay.
So, yeah, check out The Power of the Dog. It's the heavy favorite to win Best Picture this year. I think it's, like, the biggest favorite for supporting actor for Cody Smith McPhee and director for Jane Campion. Best Picture.
She wrote it too. She wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, yep, she wrote it. I don't know. I don't think she's the favorite for it. Was nominated for adapting. I don't think she's the favorite for it, but you know, you never know what can happen. Best Picture, 10 movies are nominated. Like, who knows? Like, it'll probably win, but like, upsets happen every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the biggest favorite for directing and supporting actor for sure. So
cool.
So check it out, streaming on Netflix. Check it out if you are so willing to. If you listen to us, just spoil it. Maybe not though. Maybe you're just you know.
But you just
want to know what it's about.
Maybe,
and that's
knowing
why you're listening,
the ending, you can pick up on those additional little cues that like you just don't notice the first time through. Yeah. So
there you go.
Let us know.
All right, as I said at the top of the episode, I am cutting in quickly to just go over the Academy Awards that King Richard is nominated for, since the nominations had not come out at the time of the recording. So, of course, right off the bat, it was nominated for Best Picture. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it right now. It is the favorite to win Best Actor in a Leading Role with Will Smith. It was also nominated for Best Actress in a Supporting Role in Anjanue Ellis, which was fantastic to see. It was also nominated for Film Editing, Original Screenplay, and Original Song. Beyonce getting a nomination there for Be Alive. So a total of 6 nominations. It's not guaranteed, but most likely to win at least one. So on with the review.
Up next, we have the review, our discussion of latest movie from Will Smith, King Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Airing on HBO Max. Streaming.
Streaming
on HBO Max.
It's part of that weird Warner Brothers deal where it's going to come off of streaming. Like, they only have it up for 30 days. It's the same as...
Ooh, that's it?
Yeah, it's the same as...
Oh my gosh, go on, listen to it. Watch it right now.
Or it's too late.
Stream it right now.
Or it's too late, because I don't know when this review is airing.
We don't know when people are listening.
So maybe it's too late. But yeah, it's same as Dune. They've done a bunch of them. But Suicide Squad. The Matrix will be like this, where Wonder Woman 84 was like this, where you get 30 days on HBO Max, and then they take it off.
Yeah.
And then, like, maybe it'll eventually get put back on, or put on a different streaming service. I don't know.
Okay.
So, as of the time of recording, it's been on for 2 weeks. When did it come out?
Middle of November. I think it was like the 19th.
November 19th, correct. So, some would say Will Smith's best movie in a very, very, very long time.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, like, his best movie. Like,
ever,
period. I was like,
we could talk about that, because it's a pretty good performance.
He's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can get in. What's the movie about, though? King Richard, what's it about?
So, no, this is good. I'm glad you asked, because in my mind, I'm like, oh, cool, it's a movie about the Williams sisters. And I'm like, well, it's kind of weird that, like, a movie about the Williams sisters? That was my assumption, anyway. It's not like anyone told me that, but it was just my assumption that the movie was about Venus and Serena Williams. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Them growing up and stuff, that's awesome. Why is the movie about their dad? And you're like, no, like, that's the point of the movie. The movie is about the dad. You're like, oh, okay.
Turns out he's a very interesting fellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? And Will Smith is, like, when I first saw he was going to be up for Best Actor, I was like, oh, really? Like, I know it's called King Richard, but probably supporting, right? Like, Venus and Serena are going to be the focal point. No, like, he's in this entire movie as the guy.
Yeah.
Like, because I get that argument, because Serena and Venus are who you want to see, in a sense, right? Like, they're the famous ones. Yeah. They're the ones who won, you know, 20-some Grand Slams in Serena and another 7 or 8 or something from Venus. Like, they're the names you know.
Yeah.
So you the movies from their point of view, which I get. But no, from the dad's point of view, because he, some might call crazy, and they did at points yeah. of his life.
Yeah.
But he, like, planned their life, in a sense. And this is a biopic, right? Like, it's a movie. This is not a documentary.
Right.
So some of this is going to be true, some of it not, but that's the point of a movie.
Yeah.
I think people,
they take some liberties with certain
Yeah, things. And that's something I had to wrap my head around, not for this movie specifically, but in the last, like, 5 to 10 years, I've had to, you know, I would view it as an issue if it's, oh, that's not how it really happened. And sometimes if it's a big, blatant lie and they're doing it to cover things up, so to speak, or to make people feel better, like, yeah, that's not right to do.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to view it as, this is a movie, and as long as it's not hurting the main message of, like, the people,
yeah.
and it has their approval,
yeah.
like the people shouldn't have an issue with it. Cause, like, a recent example, Green Book.
Yeah.
I have an issue with that movie because it's about the troubles of an African-American man in the South, but it's from the point of view of a white guy.
Right.
And the real family of the person that Mahershala Ali played, he was a doctor, I can't remember his name, but they...
Shoot, yeah, it's escaping me.
They had an issue with... They're like, no, that's not how it went. Like, this is clearly a movie to make, like, white people or this family feel better about themselves. That's where it's an issue. But this is...
Dr. Shirley.
Shirley, yeah.
Don Shirley is his name.
But this is Richard Williams, Serena Venus's father, and how he laid this plan out for them to become champions. Yeah. And he did that. He wrote a 78-page plan before they were born. That's something that is, like, said in real life that he had done. So he's kind of crazy. And
yeah, I mean, when you say, like, 78-page plan, like, that's how intent he was on making his daughter successful.
Yeah.
Because, like, sure, people have plans for their kids, for their family, whatever. No, this guy literally put together, like, a manifesto.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't do it for just them. He had stepchildren that, you know, he planned to be lawyers, doctors, etc. And they did, for the most part, from what I looked into. So he was just a very interesting person.
Yeah.
And this movie isn't like a start to finish biography. It's kind of like a 3-year, maybe more span
yeah,
other
I think
of
it's
lives.
Longer. I feel like they're in Florida for like 3 years.
It's interesting because I think tennis is a focal point of it, but at the same time I feel it's not. It's kind of an interesting thing. Like
yeah.
It's clearly a tennis movie, but at the same time it's just like a father-daughter.
Yeah,
movie.
Like it's a story about a dad.
Yeah. So really quickly, directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green. I think it's his third movie from what I could tell. He hadn't done a whole lot. He had done Monsters and Men in 2018. Joe Bell, which is a movie I talked about last week. I might have edited it out of the episode, but it's that Mark Wahlberg movie I'd brought up that sounds like a movie that would be good, but apparently it was terrible. Okay. And then this. So this, I think, would clearly be his best movie. It's a 91% certified on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, 98% from the viewers or audience. And the critics' consensus is King Richard transcends sports biopic formulas with refreshing, nuanced storytelling and a towering performance from Will Smith in the title role. So it opens with them in Compton, I think pretty famously. People know if you follow tennis or sports, you know the Williams were from Compton. And it kind of, you realize Richard gets a lot of shit from neighbors and other people because They think he's too hard on the girls, having them out on the tennis court all the time, in the rain, etc. And his excuse, which is a legitimate one, is, well, me doing that is keeping them off the streets. Yeah. Which is, like, yeah, I mean, Compton in the 90s, probably even now, I don't know, but early 90s, absolutely. Yeah, you probably need to come up with reasons to keep children off the streets. Like, to the point of intensity where he makes brochures about his daughters and videos about them, and he's going to these different tennis clubs and pitching them. Like, oh, you...
To all these coaches.
Yeah, like, you're not doing me a favor by taking them in. I'm doing you a favor. Like, you... This is going to be good for you if you take them in, which, like, I get, and ultimately he's right, but that's a tough sell, yeah. Initially.
Right. I think he does a good job. Like, he plays that, like... I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it, but he kind of uses that tactic of, like, playing dumb, almost, where he's just, like, you know, they give him reasons. They're like, no, I'm not going to take your daughters on because of X, Y, or Z. And he's just like, huh, yeah, no, but you should take them. Like, really, you saw everything I outlined for you, right? Like, you're the one making a mistake if you don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the crazy one here, you know? And so he shows that, like, borderline of, like, okay, like, do you just believe in your kids because you're their parent, or do you believe in them because you know they're actually going to be great?
Mm-hmm. For any great star out there who had a parent like this, there's probably 10 who didn't make it. Like, you kind of just need to probably have this attitude to make it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But this seems a little excessive, I guess. But I keep comparing it to, like, a Tiger Woods. Like, if I want to see a Tiger Woods movie, I'd probably want to see it from Earl's point of view. That would be really fascinating. I feel like it'd be kind of similar to this.
Yeah, that's probably a good comparison.
And the only difference is that Tiger's gone through a lot of controversy in his adulthood, and I feel like Venus and Serena are, like, the greatest people of all time, and there isn't really any controversy there.
They have no dirt. But, I mean, that was something that he really worked on with them, too, when coaches were eager for Venus especially to turn professional. He's like, no, she needs to go to school. She needs to do all these other things. Hey, we're going to church on Sunday. Like, you're not sending her halfway across the world competing in all these tournaments by herself. She's still a kid. She needs to be a well-rounded person. I'm not going to let my kids go broke because they don't know how to handle their money. They don't know how to handle themselves in the quote-unquote real world.
Mm-hmm.
And... It's paid off.
Yeah, I mean...
From what they've had of their life through today.
Yeah, who knows if that made a difference or not, but I feel like most people would probably appreciate that because all the coaches were telling them, no, they got to go to juniors, they got to play as much as possible, this is what they have to do. They have to do X, Y, Z to become great, and he was just like, no, we're going to do it like a different way. I want them to be kids and have a good time, and... That's where, like, one of my only issues with the movie is, and who knows, it could just be true, but just watching it, I feel like it's patting Richard on the back a lot. Like, they really paint it in a way where, like, they're the way they are because of him. Like, he made all the decisions, everything that happens to them is because he planned it that way. All the coaches said, no, you can't do it this way. And he was like, no, we're going to, and I'm going to be right. And he was. Like, everything worked out for him.
Yeah.
Like, every decision he made was the correct one, and he didn't really have any help. Like, that's what the movie made it seem.
Yeah.
And the things with the coaches, I feel like, I don't know, but I feel like it was kind of played up in the movie. You know, I was reading on John Bernthal is in this, and he plays their coach, Rick Macy. So when they moved to Florida to be in his academy, so he's their coach there. He'd coached a bunch of professionals before and really since. And when I go online, it kind of talks about how Rick Macy kind of discovered them in a sense.
Yeah, in the movie, the way that Richard... Oh, I just realized they're both like Richard, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
Richard and Rick. How they... kind of get connected is Rick's like at his academy working with his students, whatever, and someone's like, hey, Rick, this guy's called 10 times right. in a row. Like, can you just take his call? So, you know, the movie is signing up that Richard is the one who's been bugging.
Yeah, it's always Richard Williams making the extra effort, calling 10 times to make things happen.
Yeah.
Whereas in real life, maybe he did, Rick might have just seen them at a tournament and maybe had more to do with discovering them than the movie made it seem. It's stuff like that that I'm a little hesitant to believe. I feel like the movie's a little, self-indulgent on him.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, I'm like, well, I mean, I think Venus and Serena are probably just that good. You know, that maybe they didn't make it 100% because you planned it out, but maybe they're just that fucking good. And they made you look really good.
Yeah.
And this is very Venus-focused, the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Serena really isn't in it that much. And there's one scene where, towards the end, where Richard goes up to Serena and says, I know this has been tough on you, and your sister's going to be number one in the world.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. But you're going to be the greatest that ever was. You know why? Because I planned for it. Like, I don't love that. Because it's like, she's going to be the greatest of all time because of her.
Yeah.
Because she's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, she's probably better than Venus because of her own accord. Not because, oh, I was in my older sister's shadow, so now I'm going to do something differently so that I can be better than her.
Yeah. So, that's my only critique, is I feel it's very lean towards, Richard Williams is a genius and could do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that that's probably 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And it is very, it's PG-13, so it's very, he, reading about him, he has, what was it, 9 kids?
Yeah, at least. It was something like he had several from his first marriage, and then he had Venus and Serena with his wife, Orosine.
Who is the main, the mother in this movie.
Yep, the actress got nominated for supporting.
Well, the nominations aren't out yet.
She's she's a favorite for Oscar nominations. Sorry, I forgot about that. They're not out yet.
Nope. Couple months away.
And then he was remarried again, and yeah. Like, his Wikipedia page says, and at least one other. At least
like his most recent kid was born,
In 2012.
Which is crazy. I'm just he had 5 kids before Venus and Serena, and there's one sentence of dialogue about them in this movie.
Yeah.
And him and Orosine, they split up.
Yep.
Which isn't really mentioned in the movie. And I guess one thing I appreciate about it is they at least have a scene that hints at it. Yeah. They get in a huge argument at one point.
They were together for a long time, though.
They were, but I'm just saying, it's a snippet in time where I feel like they brush off kind of the negative things in his life and pump up the maybe good things in his life. And again, this is a biopic movie.
The point of it.
You can't
of
take
a movie like this.
But, it's just something that I wanted to at least bring up, is biopics do that a lot, where they brush off the bad stuff and pump up the good. So I just at least want to bring it up. And he is still alive. He, I think, had a stroke a couple years ago. So he's in okay health, but not great. So I think that's why you're not seeing him doing any press for this movie or anything like that. So,
mm-hmm.
But Will Smith's performance is amazing. He's great in this. It might be, what roles are better that he's had. His 2 Oscar nominations, Pursuit of Happiness and Ali.
Yeah.
Which are both very deserving roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is up there. I think he will get an Oscar nomination for this movie. It'll just be whether he finally breaks through with that win or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one thing that I always appreciate about biopics is when people can, really embody the person that they're trying to be. And I think one thing that probably really helped Will Smith in his preparation for the role is the fact that Richard Williams does have so much video of him and the kids and through all of their training and coaching and whatever, because they had some of it at the end of the movie. And he's got a very unique accent being from Louisiana, and I feel like Will Smith does a good job with it. And you can tell that he's got certain mannerisms, kind of how he walks and moves, and it felt like Will Smith, but you could tell that he was putting his everything into this character.
Does it? So this is where, because the other favorite to get at least nominated and possibly win is Benedict Cumberbatch, which is not, it's an original person.
Yeah.
Like, what's easier to win an Oscar with? Playing a real person, where you can compare it to video, or an original role.
The Academy loves when people like portray real characters, real people.
Still think Eddie Redmayne winning for fucking Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who else was up that year, but I remember being like, really? That's winning.
You like to hate on that one.
I do, because I don't think it's a very good movie. Same thing with Sandra Bullock for Blindside.
Yeah. I feel like I don't think it's a very good movie. She always plays the same character.
But that was like, oh, real life person, and it's like this sappy story. I don't think Blindside's a good movie. Anyways. Yeah, what else did you want to talk about with this? The girls are good. Or Venus, like the girl that plays Venus is very good in it. I feel like they actually knew how to play tennis, because what's another big tennis, like Wimbledon with Paul Bettany and Kirsten Dunst is a tennis, like, it's the only other tennis movie I can think of, and the hate that people give on that one is they didn't really play tennis, they, like, hit, they just, there's no ball, they're just swinging rackets, and then they would put a ball in CGI, a ball in there.
That's so awful.
Which is awful, you know, when you got, you're trying to bring in a big name. Like, the thing about this movie that's nice is the big name actor, Will Smith, doesn't have to play tennis.
Exactly.
And then you can just pick kids who potentially know how to play tennis, and they can be a little more unknown. Whereas a movie like Wimbledon, it's, well, we need decent actors or big name actors in this. Oh, they're not going to learn how to play tennis, like this level of tennis for this movie. So, like, I get it. It's still, like, you could probably work out some doubles a little bit if you get the back of the head, you know, doesn't need to be Paul Bettany in there, but still. But yeah, the girls were good in this. Venus, you know, especially. John Bernthal, we mentioned, like, I love John Bernthal. Like, I love seeing him and stuff.
Yeah.
He's kind of funny in this. Because it jumps, like, when they moved to Florida for his academy, it jumps ahead 3 years. Because, you know, that's a whole, like, you were talking about, like, Richard doesn't want them to be professional. So they're still going to his academy, but then not playing any matches.
And they're literally just only training.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, that Venus is going up to Rick Macy, John Bernthal's character, and is like, can you talk to my dad? Let me play in a tournament. And, like, he's got this funny, you know, relationship with them where he's like, oh, I want you to, you're preaching to the choir. And he goes, I don't want to talk to that maniac, though. Like, he's kind of got some funny banter with them. And, you know, when he goes to talk to Will Smith, Will Smith's driving in the cart. The golf cart that used to belong to Rick Macy. But Richard's, like, taking over. So he's just driving his golf cart around and stuff. Yeah. Like, John Bernthal's really good in this. The mom, who plays the mom?
Anjanue Ellis.
She's great in this, too. A great kind of supporting. I love how Richard's making all these decisions, but every once in a while she's got to be like, we're a team, right? Like, I'll support you, but you better come to me next time. Like, she's really good in this. So I thought it ended in, I guess, I expected this to end at the U.S. Open in 97. Was that when Venus made her run? Yeah, 1997, she made the finals of the U.S. Open as a, just says, youngest woman to reach the finals. You think they'd want to give you the age with this? 17 years old. So, like, that was her, one of her first big moments of her career. Like, she'd been a professional for a couple of years because she went pro in 1994. But this was, like, a 17-year-old making the finals at the U.S. Open. Like, huge deal. She's wearing the beads and the hair.
Yeah.
I assume the movie was going to end with that because her semifinal win against it was against a seeded player. But it had some moments that are very movie-esque, like during changes, her opponent, like, bumped her in the shoulder and almost knocked her down.
Ooh.
You know, so I'm like, oh, that stuff you can play up in a movie. So I assumed that it was going to be, that it was going to end there, but it ended with her first tournament ever as a professional, where she lost in the second round. So I felt like that part was a little anticlimactic for me. But, like, it worked in the movie. Like, I get it. It's, like, first tournament. This is your first big moment.
Yeah.
And it was kind of about her proving herself to sign a big contract with Nike. So, like, I get it. But I guess I expected it to be the U.S. Open.
Yeah. And when like, finish a little further down the line.
Yeah, or just with a bigger moment, bigger tournament. Okay. Like, making the finals in the U.S. Open is huge when compared to the second round of whatever tournament.
Bank of the West.
The Bank of the West tournament this was. So, I guess I just expected that. And when it didn't happen, I was a little disappointed. But like I said, it kind of, I get it. Like, watching the movie, you kind of get the progression. And it was just about her getting to the pros and proving that she
could do it. Yes, I was going to say, it was the journey of, like, getting Venus specifically to the professional tournament. So it starts with, let's find you a coach, and then it's, like, her first professional match.
Yeah. Anything else? I thought it was interesting. You asked about it, but they, one of the, what was the sister, Tundi?
Yeah.
I felt like
she was the oldest of their, like, they're three, half-sisters that they lived with.
Or half, sorry. I thought it was sad you asked. I'm interested to see what she's doing now, but she passed away in, like, 2003, so that was...
You mentioned earlier how there's one neighbor in particular in the movie, anyway, that's unhappy with Richard keeping the girls out late and in the rain and whatever. And so he comes home with Venus and Serena one night and, like, Child Protective Services is there. And he's like, no, all of my children are fed. They all have a bed. They have finished their homework. Like, these are good kids. I'm raising them to be responsible adults. And, you know, at one point, like, when the whole family moves down to Florida, they're like, oh, no, Tundi, she's staying here. She's graduated valedictorian.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, God, like, I wonder what she's up to. And you're like, ooh, yeah, she was accidentally killed by a gang in L.A.
Yep, and it was tough. I was, you know, they had some texts at the end, like most biopics do texts at the end. So I had kind of thought maybe they'd mention that there, or, like, at least mention that she tragically got shot and passed away, but didn't. So I don't know. Like, I just wanted to note that. Like, it was kind of sad that I felt like I broke that news to you.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it was kind of a nod to her, because I felt like she was the sister they brought up the most in the movie.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a nod to that, because I know Serena and Venus, I think they were producers or executive producers on this, but
along with their half sister Isha too.
Yeah,
who I think
is a lawyer. But yeah, other than that, I don't think they were too involved in this. I listened to an interview where came on set a couple times, but other than that, they, like, weren't necessarily too involved in it.
Yeah,
and I thought this was interesting. Apparently, Will Smith he wanted to do the role. Mainly because he remembered Richard doing some press conference with Venus probably around 94. And he said the way that he talked about his daughter, like, aspired Will to, like, want to support any of his daughters that he, like, had or would have in the future in the same way. And then I think they ended up recreating that scene for the movie. So it was, like, a cool moment
that
for
interview?
Him.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see, there wasn't a whole lot of trivia on this movie. I guess it's a thank you to the cast. Will Smith divided his $40 million earnings from the movie amongst the other actors as bonuses. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I do know John Bernthal did learn. He didn't play a lot of tennis in this movie, but he took lessons to try to learn and, I don't know, at least kind of look like he knew what he was doing when he was in it, which is always good or appreciated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not a whole lot else about the movie. I think, yeah, just to close it, Will Smith is great. Probably was his last good role before this.
That's a good question.
That's kind of the thing with him now that people are talking about. Like, in the 90s and part of the 2000s, you were, like, the guy. And he hasn't made a good movie in a long time. So let's see. I mean, Aladdin is good, and he's maybe one of the better parts of it, but that's a very different role than this. Bright, Collateral Beauty, Suicide Squad. Concussion is one that he liked, not a lot of other people liked. Focus, Annie, After Earth, Men in Black 3, The Karate Kid. 7 Pounds is good, but I feel like that's not quite this like tier of acting. Hancock, I Am Legend. And then Pursuit of Happiness, 2006. I mean, it's been a good, like, 15, maybe, like, 12 to 15 years since he's been in a movie of this caliber.
Yeah. It's been a long while since he's been in something really good.
Any idea on a score?
I am giving King Richard an 8.3. I think it was a heartfelt story at times. Like, I appreciate how devoted he was to his daughters, like, in the portrayal of the movie. But, like, at the same time, it's not a movie I need to see again. It was really well done for the one time that I saw it. So, I think an 8.3 is where I'm leaving it.
Okay.
Did I say 8.3 the first time around? I think I did. That's what I'm going with now.
Think so? 8.3 final answer?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in the same range, feeling an 8.5 or 6, 8.6, because I don't think it did, like, biopics to me, especially when they're PG-13, where you know they aren't going to be taking huge risks, they can be kind of paint by number. And this isn't exactly paint by number. I think I was engaged the whole time. It's almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that long.
Yeah, and I was...
And I'm not someone who likes long movies.
Yeah, and I was engaged the whole time. That's mainly because of Will Smith's performance, though.
Yes, 100%.
It is still fairly, you know... I mean, it's predictable because it's a true story and you know what's going to happen. But it still had those moments that I knew were going to happen. He goes to, like, shoot a gang member because...
I was just thinking about that moment.
Because it's someone who keeps hitting on one of his stepdaughters. And, like, I knew this was going to happen. Like, as Will Smith is, like, going to shoot him, a drive-by happens and kills the kid. And Will Smith and Richard didn't have to do anything. So it's still has these, like, kind of cliche, kind of predictable moments, but Will Smith's performance is so good that, like, it's still entertaining from start to finish. So it's still a very good movie, but it isn't, like, doing anything to reinvent the wheel for me.
Yeah.
So I'm not giving it, like, in the high eights or nines or anything like that for that reason.
Here's my one question that I was just thinking of. Do you feel like, because we follow tennis to an extent, and we know the Williams sisters pretty well, do you feel like we maybe have a different appreciation for this story than someone who knows, like, nothing about tennis?
No, I'd say no, only because Venus and Serena transcend the sport, so everyone knows who they are. And there isn't enough.
So even if you just, like, know their names at the very basic level, like, I know that they're, like, good tennis players.
Yeah, I think that's all you need to know in this, because there isn't anything too technical about tennis in this movie. Like, you don't
need
really to, you don't need to know tennis to appreciate or watch this movie. So, like, I don't think, like, it kind of maybe, like, maybe we know more going in, or I don't even know how much extra we really get out of it, because, like, I didn't know anything about Richard going into it, and that's who the movie's about. So, I think us knowing a lot about tennis, we get the Pete Sampras cameo, we get the McEnroe cameo, and we can have a chuckle about that. But other than that, I feel like I don't really get a lot of extra insight knowing, like, watching. And we don't watch a ton of tennis, but we probably watch more than an average person.
Yeah.
And all that means is we watch the four grand slams, and then I'll look up how certain players are doing outside of those tournaments. Yeah. So you asked a question, what's your answer?
Yeah, no, I think maybe we appreciate the movie a little bit differently. Just like I felt I was like finding another layer to like these people that I already knew about. You feel like you're kind of like peeking behind the curtain a little bit, diving deeper into that relationship. So instead of like just starting a relationship, it's like, oh, we're getting deeper into it. So maybe that feels a little different. But yeah, they don't get that technical into the tennis or anything. So, you know, all like the big like hitting themes, like anyone can understand, I think.
Yeah.
Relate to.
Yeah. And if anything, it hurt me because I was expecting it to end at the 97 U.S. Open. If I didn't, if you don't know anything about Venus, you don't know that she does that, then it just ends where it ends. So.
Yeah.
But that's probably just a me thing, having that expectation. I saw the beads in the trailer in her hair.
Yeah.
I just picture that with the 1997 U.S. Open. And, I mean, she wore them for more than that tournament, but, yeah. Like, that's just the first thing I think of, so I assume that's where it was going to go.
Yep.
But.
Awesome.
All right.
So that's the show today. Make sure to follow us on social media at OscarRealPod on Twitter, on the Instagram, or on the line, Exchangegram.
Exchangegram.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. If you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess it's called these days. When was the last time it was called iTunes? I don't know why I said that. But on Apple Podcasts.
You freaking millennial. You and your iTunes.
You calm down, you boomer at heart, you. leave us a review and a rating. Help us out. The more you listen, the more you review, the higher we climb in the charts. And it's almost nothing on your end. You just click that five-star button, and it helps us out immensely. Also, check out my YouTube channel. I've been posting. I'm going to post like snippets of reviews and stuff on there to check out too. So, yeah, from Matt and Haley, this has been the Oscar Real Movie Podcast.